Hi guys, it's Lydia here. Before we get into this episode, I want to give a little bit of context. I feel like I'm probably not the only one who, as I'm getting older, I feel like I have this ever-changing dynamic with my body. And I'm only 32, so I don't know what this is going to look like in 10 years. And as I'm aging, I'm trying to be much more conscious of the way that I eat and the way that I exercise and how I treat my body. And don't get me wrong, it still is partly about how it looks, for sure. But it's also realizing that this vessel that I'm in has to take me all the way through to the end of my life. And hopefully that's another, I don't know, 40, 50 years, maybe even longer. So all of the kind of twists and turns and the way that I'm looking after it now are hopefully setting the foundations for, am I going to be someone who at 50 and 60 and 70 is able to move freely? I guess it's a little bit coming to terms with my own mortality, if that makes any sense. And the decision of whether or not to have kids is really tied up in this for me. Like that view of how I see my body and how will I see my body if we have kids? Will I still be strong? Will I still look like myself? Am I inevitably going to look and feel like a different person? What would pregnancy do to me? And obviously it doesn't help all the kind of negativity and all the narrative around this in the media. It feels like a very scary decision. Just have the complete unknown of what might happen to your body. And that is literally just your body. There's the whole mental side of it, of like, how is this going to impact my mental health? And am I still going to feel like me? I hear so many mothers talking about that they just feel like they're not themselves after having a child. And that is actually terrifying. And in this episode, I get into all of this with Amy. She's a content creator and she's a mutual friend of mine and Louise's. You'll recognize the name Louise if you listen to the episode about dating in your 30s. I wanted to share Amy's perspective because she's gone through lots of different iterations and changes in the relationship with her body. And her body itself has changed in many ways over the last decade. She's been an athlete. She's been a body confidence advocate. She's been a bodybuilder. Now she's a mother and she's also a bigger bust influencer. And we'll get into all of that and what that means. In this episode, we get into how society and media can really influence the way that you've seen yourself. And I mean, who hasn't sat on social and looked at a picture of someone and thought, oh my God, I wish I looked like that. Amy shares her experience through pregnancy, how her view of her body has changed, and she also goes into her experience with postpartum depression. This episode really has the light and the dark and the ups and the downs. There is a lot of laughing, but there's also some tears. It's very raw and it's very honest. What I will say is if you've ever felt like you're at war with your reflection or you're worried about how motherhood might change you, then this episode is going to stay with you. So let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Welcome to the beige couch.
Thank you.
We are, and also you're kind of blending in with your trousers. We're actually full beige in here. Beige couch, beige trousers, beige wool. I was going to say beige nails, but...
Kind of. Yeah. We're going for a neutral palette.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you for joining me. I've been trying to get you on here for a while.
It's been a bit of a challenge.
Do you want to tell a little, just a quick recap of what happened last time we tried to record?
I had to go into the office to film something that wasn't for me. And then got stuck on the M25 because a car blew up. Then I tried to do a sneaky dodge at the exit and got pulled over by the police. Got a nice fine and then ran to the train and they shut the doors in my face.
Classic.
And then I had a meltdown at Orpington Station.
Yeah. And that's the voicemail that I got of, I've been pulled over by the police. And I was like, what? And I was chatting to the people at the studio downstairs and they were like, is she okay? I was like, I don't know, to be honest. I don't know what she's done. But
no, I just went over the chevrons that I shouldn't have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looks cool. Did it feel cool at the time when you're like...
Yeah, I was like Fast and Furious, channeling my inner... Is it The Rock that's in that?
God, I don't even know. All I know is that there's like 9 of them.
Yeah, a million. Yeah. But it wasn't very fast. It wasn't very furious because I got pulled over in court. So...
Well, there you go. Taught a lesson.
Yes.
Grab my little tea. So there's so much of your story that we could delve into. I feel like you've had a million iterations of yourself. And for anyone listening, Amy and I met through Louise, who, if you've heard that episode, she came on and talked about being single. And I've been kind of following your journey quietly from afar for a little while. Do you want to kick off with your kind of, how you started getting a following, your kind of fitness journey, I guess?
Yeah. So I guess I started posting in, oh my God, 13, 14.
Damn.
I was bored. Actually, this resonates with Louise's episode. I was bored in my job, so I retrained as a personal trainer.
Love it.
We all go through that, right? Mainly because I've always done sport. I've always been massively into sport. And also just thought from a kind of technical point of view, I wanted to know how to move my body better.
Mm.
So I retrained as a personal trainer. And then off the back of that, basically was hit with so much stuff of like, well, you don't look like a personal trainer, or how can you do that sport when you don't have abs, or like, and I was just like, there is this whole space of people that are completely unrepresented because you don't look a certain way. And actually fitness isn't a look, it's a testable kind of medium, whereas looking fit is a societal norm.
Like, yeah.
So I decided to create a space online for people who wanted like realistic kind of less fitness inspo account, basically, of like a real person doing real things and looking like a real person when they do it.
Mm. Yeah. And your thing wasn't about being like, you know, super skinny, shredded, right? Like you were going for strength.
Yeah, when I started, yeah, it was all about, I loved training in the gym, I loved lifting heavy. The feeling I felt after doing like a heavy deadlift, I wanted people to experience that.
Mm.
So I really wanted to encourage more women to start weight training because it's so good for us, but also that you don't have to look a certain way in order to do it. And also that it to give people confidence to do it, because I think especially back then, like women in the weight section was just like not heard of.
Mm. But
yeah, so that's kind of where it started, yeah.
Well, how was that? You said people were saying to you like, oh, you don't look like a PT, or you don't look like a fitness person.
It was really hard. I think I look back now and I think if I'm truly honest with myself, I did want to look like that. Like I did.
Right.
And those comments did play a part. I kind of had this internal kind of battle of like, I want to look like that because one, it would help me with the algorithm and it would help me reach more people. But also on the other hand, I wanted to fight it because I'm just like, there are so many unrepresented people and I want to give everyday women the confidence to kind of be who they are and just move for moving. And so there was a real internal battle there. But also that drove me to do so many events just to prove people wrong. And so it kind of gave me a bit of a chip on the shoulder in that I'm going to keep doing and keep pushing my body to places that you wouldn't expect it to go because of what it looks like. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. Really. So yeah, I think and it did play a big part in my confidence in myself. Like I had to really, really dig deep and fight through comments like that.
Did you feel like did the following influence like how good you felt inside? Was it like that kind of validation?
Yeah, massively. Like I struggle now, even now, when I work really hard on something and like no one likes it, or like, and I think, oh, what am I doing wrong? Do I need to do it differently? Do I need to edit myself in a different way? And I have to really stop myself and be like, actually, this is about making content that I love, doing things that I love that make me happy, and remind myself that I started this out because if I could help one other woman or one other person feel better, I'd done a good job.
Yeah.
And I did at one point, and I'm sure my husband will say like, and he says to me now, put your phone down, because like it got obsessive, like about growing. And I lost for a long time this is about building a community, not just like growing as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And kind of keeping my purpose. And I fight with that a lot sometimes.
Your purpose has changed kind of as you've evolved. So at first you have this community and you're showing people that like, you know, you can be fit and you don't have to look this certain way, like real people doing real exercise and feeling good. And then what was your next kind of like evolution for you?
I started on a, you don't have to lose weight to feel good. And I'm back there, but I did go through this shift of like, and I think I still fight this now in that if you want to lose weight, it's okay. I think there's this massive kind of, everyone talks about diet culture, and I grew up in the noughties. Like, you know, I worked at Topshop. I starved myself to fit into Kate Moss jeans. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially as like a slightly bigger girl. When in fact, I look back and I think, absolutely not. You're a size 10, 12, mate. Like,
God, isn't that mad?
Yeah.
I think about that all the time. It was like, who was it? Natalie, what was her name? The one who was on EastEnders.
I can't remember her surname.
Natalie something. She would just get slated in like OK magazine. I think she'd had like 3 kids.
Yeah.
She'd be on the beach having a lovely time. And the things that they would say about her, who literally, what, size 12, maybe a 14?
Yeah.
And they made out that she was just like, oh, you could not even see her in the media. Like, it's so awful for her to be an actress and look like that.
Honestly, I remember someone said, oh, you remind me of Bridget Jones. And I was so offended. I cannot. Whereas now I'm like, hell yeah.
Yeah,
I do.
And also Bridget Jones now, like, Renée Zellweger looks fucking amazing.
I know, what an absolute icon. I'll take that. So the thing with diet culture is that while we need to fight that kind of you need to lose weight in order to have worth, we kind of now have tarred it the other way. Like only the other day I saw another, hate the word influencer, but content creator who posted around anyone that takes like Mounjaro or is looking to lose weight in the body confidence circle. Like basically like you're not a body confidence advocate. And I think that's so toxic in itself because you can still want to lose weight. You just have to do it for the right reasons. You can still want to gain weight. You just have to do it for the right reasons. So I think that's where I've gone full circle back to. So when I first started losing weight, I was really scared about posting it because I was like, oh, I've built this whole thing about not needing to change. And then here I am actually behind the scenes, like very, very upset about the way I look. I didn't like my body. I was very uncomfortable and I wanted to lose weight, but I wasn't sure like how to mask that. So I kind of did it behind closed doors and then covered it up by doing bodybuilding competition. It was a challenge now. So that's why I was going to the next level with what I looked like. I mean, everyone could see that I dropped a lot of weight over that period of time on my growth.
Yeah.
But it was also really hard because the smaller I got, the more followers I got.
Right.
So it kind of fed into that kind of like egotistical kind of like validation of like, well, I'm becoming more worthy because I'm getting smaller. And although I am still talking about loving your body regardless of like what size you are, and I truly believe that, I was still morphing into like something else. Yeah.
I mean, it's almost impossible not to a degree, right? Because society and the algorithm and everything pushes you that way.
Massively.
The comments. And so you're doing your bodybuilding,
you're
doing all these events, like have a really big following. And is that when you had your baby or when?
No. So I did the bodybuilding and like, I mean, you want to talk about messing up your relationship with your body? That will do. It was the best thing I've ever done in terms of like seeing how far I could mentally and physically push myself because it was the hardest thing I've ever done. But, and I would also say, it's the first time I've ever been proud of myself of a sporting achievement. And like, I have run marathons, I've done half marathons, I've done triathlons, I've played national level sport, I've represented county at rugby, like I've done lots and lots of stuff. But I will say stepping on that stage and then looking at those photos afterwards was the first time that I ever felt openly okay with saying I'm proud of myself. Right. And that was because I knew that I had done absolutely everything by the book to get to that point. But I still cried on the side of the stage and said I wasn't doing it because I was too fat.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. My friend who did it with me, who I dragged on this crazy journey with me, who was like, big shout out to her for doing it with me. She was like, you have to get on that stage because you have put me through 36 weeks of hell. So you are getting on that regardless of how you feel. Because like, and I mean, I look back at photos now and I think how my body dysmorphia was just like, how I could look at like, I could see like ribs, like, and I was still like, nope. But it's also like, I went to a massage because we were sore. So our coach was like, I'll go for like a drainage massage. And the girl massaging me said, oh, you're doing bodybuilding. Like, you're not as lean as I thought you'd be. And it was like always things like that. And I remember we also went and saw friends and everyone was talking to my friend like, oh my God, like you're so lean. And like, I got nothing. And I'm talking like, I'm wearing size 6 jeans now. And I was a size 20 when I started.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? And no one said anything to me.
That's bizarre.
And it all played into this whole thing of, you're not good enough. You're still not good enough. Like, you need to be thinner. Like, and because how can you step on stage if people are saying to her like, oh my God, look at how much muscle you've got. Like, da da da. And like, I was still getting nothing. I was just like, this is, and it just but online I got that from being online. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like I got the likes and the comments and stuff. Yeah.
What made you move away from that bodybuilding life?
When I rebounded from the comp, it was hard. Like I could I can't even explain how I felt about my body. And also, as I got bigger, people started unfollowing me as well. So it was
as
like
you got musclier.
No, as I got put weight back on. So it was
okay,
less
so you've
lean.
Done the competition, and done then the competition. You're like, right, that was my leanest I want to get to. Yeah. Now I want to be a bit back to a normal routine.
Yeah, basically, I was getting married, so I had my we did the comp in the June. I got married in the August. Yeah, so and I remember going to my last fitting, and the dress was a bit tighter, and I just burst into tears. And I was like, I don't want to wear this on my wedding day. And they were, you know, when people are looking at you like, what the fuck? And it was because I was crying about, you know, when I first went for my first dress, they had me in a size 16 and we had to reorder two dresses to get them smaller because they couldn't take it in anymore.
Wow.
I was in the dress, but I was just like, it's too tight. I can't wear this. Like, and I think at that point, they were like, we're going to call your mum. I was like, okay. And I FaceTimed my mum and she was like, you're insane. Like, you look amazing. And I think that triggered something in me that you need to come back to reality now. Like, let's start kind of like living life again outside of social media.
Outside of other people's validation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you get into the dress, you get married.
Yeah, get married.
Love it. Where did you get married? In the UK?
Yeah, I got married down in Hythe in Kent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It was the first wedding out of lockdown restrictions being completely lifted.
Oh, fun.
So it was
crazy.
Yeah. And my husband's a rugby boy and obviously all my friends are sporty. So you can imagine it was like, yeah, crazy.
Rowdy
best
times.
Day ever. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah, we chose to save budget on other stuff to put it into a bottomless 2 hours of drinking at the beginning. Yeah.
I think that's a solid choice. For anyone planning a wedding, I think put money into the booze.
100%, yeah. So yeah, that was really great.
And where did you go on your kind of fitness journey? Did you continue with your Instagram and like working out still?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So I joined CrossFit. I started CrossFit. I needed to channel my energy into something else. I moved away from sport, team sport. And for the first time ever, I was like, okay, I need to do something that is kind of teamy, community like vibes, but allowed me to kind of focus in and start healing. So went to CrossFit.
Joined a cult.
Joined the cult. And then really shifted towards getting as physically strong as possible and as many muscles as I could. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And that was going very well. And then I got pregnant.
And then you got pregnant.
Then I got pregnant.
Were you trying? Was like, it, you planned to get pregnant?
Yeah, like we were. Like yeah. We weren't being safe, but so like it could happen.
Yeah.
But I didn't want the pressure of, like a few of my friends around me were trying and they were like peeing on ovulation sticks and all this stuff. And from bodybuilding, I lost my period. So
wow.
I was competing in the June. I lost my period in the December before I competed.
That's extreme.
Yeah. And I didn't get it back until the following December.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had almost a year with no menstrual cycle. So when I went to the doctors in the Jan, because I needed to get my coil taken out because it was expiring. She asked me about, oh, are you thinking of children? And I said, yeah, so I don't really want to put one back in.
Yeah.
And then she said, well, a normal couple could take 6 to 12 months with a regular cycle and you don't even have that. So, you know, it could take you longer. So I was like, okay, well, let's just
see what happens.
Yeah, see what happens. Because I didn't want to put any pressure on myself. And I also think the thought of being pregnant was something that had always, always scared me.
Tell me about that.
I shouldn't really say this out loud. So I always said to my mum that I would have surrogate because I didn't want
it. I used to say that as well.
Yeah, I was like, I just don't want. But it came from not wanting to be fat.
It was also that, do you remember, I don't know who it was who did it. There was someone really famous who had a surrogate, probably when we were like 18 or so. And it was that too posh to push.
Yeah, yeah.
And And was it posh having a C-section?
Yeah, it was too. It was. Yeah, it was too posh to push for the C-section.
C-section. Yeah. And from that, I remember being like, "Oh, I would never give birth. Like, maybe I would have a C-section, but ideally, I would have a surrogate."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I think for me, it stemmed from I'd always fought being the bigger girl. Why would I be pregnant and get even bigger? Like, that scared the hell out of me. Yeah. So I always used to say to my mum, oh, someone else will have my baby for me.
So how did it feel then when, you know, you've been sort of seeing what will happen, you get pregnant? Was there a fear from that? Was it like reality hitting?
I think so. I think I was excited. Like, I think I always knew I wanted children.
Mm.
Children. We'll get back to that a bit. I just, yeah, wasn't sure I wanted to physically have them. But also, surrogacy is very expensive, so not really a choice for me. So I think I was excited, but when I told my mum, I cried. And she was like, oh, why are you crying? And it was from, like, absolute anxiety and fear of growing a child.
We'll get into, like, listeners' submissions later, but this is one of the big things that's come up on the podcast every time we talk about kids, like, on our Instagram channel, is that your body changing is something that everyone is terrified. And you understand why, because if you go on the comments of any person on the internet who's pregnant, I mean, Margot Robbie, right?
Yeah.
Margot Robbie, she's in Italy. She's wearing, like, I think a swimsuit or a black bikini.
The biggest one I saw was, like, she's let herself go.
Yeah, she's coming out of a boat and people are like, oh, she has let herself go.
Yeah.
It's like, this woman is about to give birth and she's Margot Robbie. She's literally one of the most beautiful women in the world. And when you see time and time again that these, like, incredibly beautiful women, successful women, powerful women are just completely disregarded at the minute they get pregnant, it's like, well, yeah, why would any muggle like us be like, yeah, I want to do that.
Yeah, I would love to do that, you know. No, I mean, I don't know how people, I mean, some people have wonderful pregnancies, like, don't get me wrong, like, they do. My sister had, like, three amazing deliveries, amazing pregnancies. Like,
nice.
Gave me two beautiful nieces and a nephew, like, who's just the most loving little boy ever. But some people don't.
And yeah.
I did not. I was very sick. And through the whole thing, I had indigestion through the whole thing. I basically slept sitting upright from about 20 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
From indigestion?
Yeah, and just being uncomfortable. Fuck. I also, like, so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to keep training, da-da-da. And then hit a complication and I couldn't. I had to stop training, which was a massive mental blow for me because I was, like, so anxious anyway. Training was my happy space. It really clears my mind. And then all of a sudden they were like, you need to stop. So the only thing I was doing was teaching indoor cycling still. I couldn't lift heavy. I couldn't do anything because of complications that I had. So, like, that whole thing was stripped away and I honestly felt like part of my identity had gone. So all I had to focus on was this anxious worry every day of, like, getting bigger, trying to embrace it. It helped when I actually felt him move, like, that. Obviously, I didn't know he was a him at that point, but that really kind of, there was a connection there at that point.
Like, there's a reason I'm doing this.
Yeah, there is a reason. Like, there's an actual life there. So, like, that helped. But then it just onset another worry of, like, oh my God, like, this is a real life human I've got to take care of.
Mm.
And also, like, you can't really do anything when they're in there. Like, it's not like a physical thing you can hold. So, like, there was just constant worry as well. Like, ooh. And I think you get through, no one ever tells you of pregnancy, especially your first one. And I think it will change your second. That's kind of what I've heard. But you kind of get to, like, milestones and you think you're, like, safe, or you think, like, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you're, like, counting the days to get to the next one. And
okay.
The next one. Instead of, I wish I'd just kind of embraced it, like, a little bit more. I also fought a lot as well, like, and this is just generally who I am as a person, to, like, prove people wrong. So, like, I didn't want to nap because I was tired. Well, I can do it. I can carry on. I can, like, keep going.
Mm.
And actually, like, in hindsight, I think, why didn't you have a nap, bitch? Like, have to lay down. Like, this is the time to do it.
Yeah.
So, like, I think I fought a lot of that type of stuff as well.
But it's probably, you know, the internalized pressure of how people treat pregnant mothers.
Yeah.
That, you know, I worked in startups for a really long time and I actually my last startup that I worked in, I took quite a senior role. And I purposely didn't tell them how old I was. And I purposely didn't tell them that I was getting married, because I didn't want them to presume that I was going to have a child and not give me like the same opportunities on the table. And I think that's something that just happens. There's so many parts of being pregnant of like, it is a sacrifice. And I don't think that society gives women the credit that is deserved for like literally bringing life into the world.
I think we've normalized it. Like, you know, there's stats that say like growing a child is basically like doing a marathon every day. Pretty sure that's a scientific fact. And, you know, also through pregnancy, you basically go back through, and just after having a baby, you go through kind of like a second kind of puberty shift. So your brain is rewriting your neuro pathways when you're pregnant and when you give birth. Again, there's like there's studies on it. And essentially, that's why you hear a lot of women lose sense of self, because that shift that you had when you went into puberty, where you're like trying to find out who you are, you have that again. Like, who am I now? Because we've just rewritten, like our hormones have completely changed again. We've rewritten neuro pathways. Like, no wonder we feel like that. But actually, it's so normalized that it's not spoken about, because it's just like, oh, we just do
it.
Just get on with it. Like, it's what you're made to do. So like, yeah, and it's the same with giving birth. You know, I had a C-section, and, you know, I laid there awake as they cut through 7 layers of my body. Pulled out a life that I'd just grown for, well, more like 10 months. And then they were like, well, you know, get up and walk as soon as you can. Now, if someone got hit by a bus and just had major abdominal surgery, we wouldn't be like, come on, hun.
Get up.
Come on, the sooner you get up, the better it will be. Like, and we've just normalized the whole process. And I think it's a great thing, because so many more people survive, so many more people can have babies, and like scientific and like medical kind of stuff like has come on so far that it's become more normalized. But actually, to sit back and be like, you have literally created something that didn't exist.
Yeah.
Grown it and delivered it out of your body. And then you've got to look after it with no sleep, having done that, and nurture it. And not only that, you've then got to produce the food for it to survive. Like, that is incredible.
And if you don't, people will judge you.
And then, what you choose to do, you get judged on anyway.
God, there's so many points in what you just said that, like, kick off things for me. Because the thing you were saying about going through, like, another puberty, I recently listened to this podcast, and this woman was talking about the word, I'm probably going to say it wrong, I think it's matrescence. And matrescence? It might be matrescence.
Yeah.
And it's like adolescence, that you've got adolescence, and everyone knows, like, in adolescence, there's all these hormones, there's all these like changes. And there is a word for that, which is matrescence, which is when you become a mother, that you go through exactly the same thing. But society doesn't really recognize that. I'd never heard of this before.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are we not paying a little bit more attention that this is a cataclysmic, like, ginormous change physiologically, mentally?
Yeah.
Your whole life is changing.
And I also think we just don't talk. And I also think as women that have done it, we don't talk about it either. I think, like, you know, we had a brief conversation before we started, and I said, like, I just wanted to turn around to some of my friends who've had children before me and be like, what the fuck? Why don't you kind of, like, give me a little bit of a warning? But then also you have to balance, like, being so openly honest of your experience and worrying or setting someone up to feel a certain way, when actually everyone is so different. Everyone's going to handle it so differently. And like I said, like, my sister had a great time, like, you know, but, you know, could I? And I also think you get this weird thing when you look back and you think, oh, I should have been there more for that person, because you just don't know how to be there when you've not experienced it.
Right.
And I think it's because we don't have those conversations that actually, you know, small things like, don't bring round a big tip. Don't take round a cute baby outfit. Take round a dinner.
Bring a lasagna.
Yeah. Put a lasagna in the, you know, when you get to like your friend's house, don't touch the baby. Go and give her a massive hug. Like, those things we don't really think about, but actually make the most difference in those kind of first days afterwards and and forward on. But until you've been there, you don't think about these things. Yeah.
Have you seen, I think it's like quite a South Asian culture that when women give birth, obviously like the whole family kind of comes around and looks after her. But I again heard someone talking about this and they were like, the idea that a woman would be making cups of tea when they've just given birth in that part of the world is like, it would be shameful, like disgusting. It's like she should literally lie in bed for a month and everyone should look after her and the baby because they value or they know the kind of journey she's gone through physically.
Yeah, a few people did say that to me, like as like advice, like, you know, the whole kind of like mother the mother type thing.
Mm.
But again, I was like, no, I don't need help. I'm fine. Like I can get through this. Yeah. But actually it does take a village.
Definitely. And obviously, I mean, it goes without saying that there's so many things that are not set up to help mothers, whether that's, you know, having maternity, like we don't have the best maternity in the world. In some countries, I think it's in Finland and the Nordics, you can get, there's some, I'm actually going to check this because I wrote it down because I was like, Jesus, I need to move there. There's places where you can get up to 16 months full pay.
I think it is the Nordics, so like Sweden.
Yeah, Sweden, 16 months of 80%. Paid paternal leave.
Yeah.
Like, and then you've got, you know, this shit going on in America where they don't actually even have a federal level of maternity. There's no federal guarantee of maternity. Yeah. And yet they're saying, like, we're pro-family and we want you to have kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's
get
mental.
Your shit together.
I also think as well, we don't support men in this country as much as well. And I think that's a massive thing is about, you know, allyship. And if we can empower more men to be a part of it, you know, by normalizing. So for example, my husband's self-employed. So he took 2 weeks off, but fully unpaid. There was no, you know, there's maternity grant for women, but you know, what if I hadn't made it through? Like, how would he have like how would he have even been able to pay for the house and da 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 da? And we had to like, obviously like I thought about things like that ahead and we had like policies and stuff in place. But you know, there was nothing. He wouldn't get anything. No maternity allowance, nothing, because he was a man. And that doesn't send the message of like, it's also his child too. And I think even at work as well, I think, you know, normalising, getting men to go pick the child up and that type of stuff. And I think we have to empower them to be part of it. But also share, I think, you can't relate to like being through it as a man. And it took me a long time to open up to him about how I felt. In order to let him come in a little bit and understand on like a like role perspective kind of thing of like what I needed from him. Yeah,
we definitely haven't built a society that makes it easy for men to be there and to be present if they want to.
You know,
even the shame that people put of like on stay at home dads, and it's like, well, that is also a perfectly valid role.
Yeah, I mean, I work compressed hours, so my husband does most of the nursery pickups and drop-offs. And I remember the first time I went and I did one, and it's not men in any way, but the nursery staff were like, oh, it's nice to meet you. And I was just like, oh, it shouldn't be such a shock. Like, because like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because it's so normalized that the mum does the pickup and the drop-off.
Mm.
Like, you know, it's okay for a man to do it.
Yeah.
You know, he's just as much his dad as I am his mum.
For sure.
Yeah.
So once you'd had your son, where were you at, like, with your, you know, your body image had been such a crucial part and you'd had such a journey with it. Where were you with your body and your mind after that?
Oh, gosh. So, and this is, like, full honesty, and I'm sure lots of people follow this. I remember getting home and thinking, I have ruined my life. Like, and don't get me wrong, I absolutely love my son. I would do absolutely anything for him. And but it was not love at first sight. And I think that's another thing we don't talk about. Everyone thinks it's this magical moment and you instantly love them. And I didn't. I grew to love him. I knew I wanted to protect him no matter what, but it wasn't like love. It was, I'm going to protect you because I made you, you're mine and I care. But it wasn't like an instant, like falling in love, magical moment. But then I didn't have that with my husband either. I don't think I've ever met anyone instantly loved them. And I did think, I remember sitting, I was so tired. And obviously, like, again, we don't talk about this. So obviously, you still have a stomach after you've given birth. You still have kind of like a pregnancy stomach, but it's also like not full. It's like squidgy and it drops. Mm. You're wearing adult diapers. Like, I cannot explain like how thick these diapers are. You know, it's just, and I had a C-section, so I also had like a big scar across my stomach, like a big wound. And I just remember like looking in the mirror thinking, what have you done? Like, you have ruined your life.
Wow.
Yeah. But I just got on with it. Like, I just had this natural instinct that I need to protect him and keep him alive. And that's just what I went into. And I didn't look in mirrors. I just avoided them. Yeah. Lots of baggy pajamas and just didn't look at myself, really. Yeah. And I did that for months. Yeah, I just focused all my energy on like the job at hand, and obviously learning to breastfeed, and also like that again is something that is so natural, but also it's so hard. Like, and that's another thing we don't talk about as well, I think, is that it's a learning curve for you, but also for your baby. You're both learning how to do it. And I am not surprised lots of women don't want to do it or give it a go. And then it is so hard and it's painful.
Mm.
And you have to like harden your nipples up. And, you know, that changes them. They change colour. They've changed shape. They've changed size. And it's that as well, getting and kind of what your breasts used to be to what they are, their function then to what they are now. Like, I didn't let my husband go near them until I finished, probably 3 to 4 months after I finished breastfeeding. I stopped breastfeeding Max in the November after he was born, so 11 months. Yeah, because they just became like a functional working bit of my body. Yeah,
yeah, that word of function is so interesting to me, because it's crazy to think that a part of your body that you've had your whole life you can suddenly see in a completely different way.
Completely.
And how were you kind of mentally in that time? Survival mode?
I think I was in some survival mode probably for a while, actually. I think at least the first 3 months. So I didn't think that there was anything, like I say, wrong with me. So obviously I got diagnosed with postnatal depression, but that happened in the May, June. So about 6 months after I had Max.
Mm.
And I think for the first kind of three, I was desperately in survival, and also just like masking, really, like that I was okay, that I was coping. And but in reality, like when Ben left the house and went to work, like I was just like, yeah, just trying to do the bare minimum every day just to keep myself going.
Mm.
But it was hard. It was so hard. Yeah. Like intrusive thoughts and things like that to deal with them. Yeah.
And it's much more prevalent than people realize, postnatal depression.
Yeah. And it can come on up to a year afterwards as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Check that, but I'm pretty sure 6 to 12 months on it can hit you. Yeah. Because I think you just do survive. And you tick the boxes and you turn up every day. And there comes a point where that's going to give in. If there's underlying stuff there.
How did you know? Was it you? Was it your partner? Like, at what point were you like, okay, it's so downplayed, right? I was going to say, this isn't just the baby blues. Do you remember that used to be a thing? So, where people were like, oh, you've got the baby blues.
So the baby blues are like I cried for days. They normally hit around day three, I think, right? Okay. Day three or four of having a baby. I did cry, like, and I'm talking like from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to my minimal sleep, I cried. And that did pass. But what I was left with was emptiness. That's how I can describe it. Just like I had my functional purpose of keeping Max safe and alive. But outside of that, like I had just no joy in anything. And I also went into, so I had postnatal depression, PTSD, and anxiety. So I went into like hyper function, basically. So like in safety for him. So I wouldn't sleep because I had to watch him the entire time. I would like triple check doors were locked. I wouldn't, you know, really go anywhere. I couldn't see him. I had two cameras on him.
Mm.
Even like when we were sleeping in the same room, I used to lay awake at night and listen to him like breathe. Like it was just really hyper like security kind of conscious. I would be like Googling stuff like all the time. And I think there's a level of that when you first have a baby because you've never done it before. Yeah, and it's new. But like it was unhealthy. It was the point that it was like unhealthy. Didn't really like other people holding him. Like it would make me really like clammy, and I'd be like, what, like everything, like watching. Didn't really like driving in the car. Obviously, I couldn't drive for a while because I had a C-section. So, but like, didn't really want to go outside just in case. Like, and like thoughts would be like, well, what if I let go of the buggy and it just goes into the road type thing. So I had that. But then in terms of knowing where there was something wrong, I just remember what there would be bouts of that and then bouts of just like, I don't have the energy for this. Like I, the time that I realized I needed help, I sat on the top of my, so I live in a townhouse and from our front door, the first set of stairs go straight up and he was crying. And I remember sitting on the stairs, listening to him, staring at the front door and thinking, if I just walked out in front of a bus, it'd be so much easier.
Mm. Yeah. And you can tell you feel guilty for that, right? That's a difficult thing that I didn't know about postnatal depression, is that I had no idea that it came with that duality of like, people often think it's because you like, oh, you, they don't care about their kid. There must be something wrong with them. They don't care. Mm. But actually you've gone through this fixation on like, you care so much that the idea of anything being wrong is like overwhelming, I guess.
Yeah. It was kind of like, he would live a better life if I wasn't there.
Mm. And now you're through that, you have a lot of like compassion for, you know, you of that time. Now you look back.
I do, yeah. I think it taught me a lot about being very self-aware. It's made me very self-aware now. And also allow me to be vulnerable. Like I always wear my heart on my sleeve. I've always been that type of person. Like I always been told like, I don't have a poker face, but I think I've always covered a lot of stuff up in kind of fake confidence or proving people wrong. And actually I allowed myself to go, I'm just not okay. Like I need help.
Mm.
And I don't think I've ever really been like that with people. And so yeah, like I think it kind of taught me that vulnerability isn't weakness, actually. It's actually a really great strength that you can say, like, and it was the first time ever I told my husband. So I was always, in our relationship, I was always like the cheerleader. I made mm-hmm. the plans. I drove off, like he would have stayed at home living with his mum, I'm pretty sure, for the rest of his life. It wasn't for me. But, you know, I took him traveling. You know, we forced us into getting a house, and like I just drove those plans forward. And it was the first time that I ever really sat down. I said to him, like, I cannot be that role anymore. Like I need you to step up and like cheerlead for me. Like, and not that he didn't, but you know, like if people always say like in a relationship, there's a main character and there's a supporting act.
Yeah.
And like, I would say I was the main character and he was a supporting act. And I kind of, what I said to him was, I need you to be the main character, because I just need to support like at the background for a while. And that was a real shift for him and me, because I'd never, ever been that vulnerable with him in that term. So it's like how I felt and what I needed. So, yeah. So I think that taught me a lot about that. And I think I feel a lot of guilt and I feel sorry for myself in a way, because I feel like I missed out on such a magical period of Max's life.
Mm.
That now I'm trying to like make up for it sometimes. But in hindsight, I also think I'm living in every moment now, like, and holding on to it like so tightly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, you know, you didn't, whilst it might feel like you missed out on things, you still showed up every day.
Oh, yeah.
You got him through and you cared for him. And, you know, the reason that he is like a happy little boy now is because you gave him all that time, even when your cup was empty.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. Like my mum always reminds me of that. Like she's like, you know, he's as loud and, you know, out there as he is because he feels so safe and you did that. Like, so I have to be proud of myself. But I also think I feel like it was taken away from me without my control, really. Mm. Yeah. And I stopped posting on social. I did take a massive break away from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I shared all my journey before having him. And then I attempted to go back to it, like, straight after. And then, yeah, about 3 months when I realised there was something wrong, I just completely stepped away from sharing anything with anyone.
What did that journey of healing kind of look like for you? You reached out and said, you know, I need help. What happened next?
Therapy. And I think everyone should get therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really... I spoke to my... I have a really good relationship with my mum, and I spoke to her and I spoke to my husband, and they said to, you know, speak to the doctor. So I went and spoke to the doctor, and they were, the NHS can have many faults, but I cannot, like, the speed at which my doctor got me into the kind of perinatal team was just so quick. And then I had, weekly therapy sessions. Yeah. We worked on the PTSD first and then broke it down. Yeah. Until I was ready to go at it myself, basically. Yeah.
Do you think you've transformed, like, as a person in the way you see the world from having a child?
Yeah, massively. I think I'm so much more grateful than I ever was before. Like, I'm practicing gratitude than I ever was before.
Hmm.
And I think also my relationship with my body. So I manifested a lot of anxiety in eating as well. So I gained a lot of weight. So actually, when I look back, again, hindsight's great, I actually was losing weight, but because you do naturally, like, breastfeeding, you can burn up to like 600 to 1,000 calories a day just sitting and breastfeeding. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's mental.
Your body's like a machine at that point.
Absolute machine. Like, yeah, I was losing weight. I just wasn't aware of it. But then obviously when the depression and stuff really kicked in, I was just like eating to like try and, I don't know, like, I've never had that before. I've never had food as like a crutch like that. If I've ever gained weight, it's definitely of my own doing and knowledge. I've done it actively. So I got to the biggest I've ever been. But I also was like, you survived. Like, you know, like, at that point, you know, 6 months ago, I didn't want to be here. And this is what I tell myself now and even now. Like, I'm like, 2 years ago, I didn't want to be here. Mm. And I'm here, like, and I'm moving. So, like, my relationship with, like, exercise changed a lot. It wasn't about proving anyone wrong anymore. It was moving to live. Like, so, like, moving to be healthy, moving to play with Max, moving to just be able to move. Like, how lucky am I that I can go and move? Like, I can go and run outside, I can go for a walk. Like, and so it really changed. And I think as well, like, I looked at my body in a completely different way. Like, yeah, I might not be as small as I was, or I might have a new scar here, or, you know, I now have like the classic mum tum, but I'm here and I'm alive and I'm living. Like, and I've got amazing friends and family around me, you know, that want me around, that I want to be around. And they don't care about my body or what I look like. Like, they love me for who I am. And I think it gave me this real shift in perspective.
Mm.
And that only came, like, from having Max. Yeah.
Mm.
Otherwise, I think I would have probably been fighting myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trying to find the perfect.
The balance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a really beautiful thing. And I've been on that journey of, like, trying to get to that point of exercising just for the joy of it and not having any of these, like, oh, I want this to be bigger and I want this to be tighter.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it is, as you say, like, the minute you have an injury, or, you know, I haven't had a kid, so I can't even imagine that kind of feeling of taking away of your body in how you know it. But even just from having an injury, it's like the minute you can't do something physically, when it's so important for your mental health and for you, for your identity, like, it was so much of who you were that, yeah, I can imagine you're just like, it's fucking amazing to be able to do that again.
I think that's a massive point. Like, I did make fitness part of my identity. Like, it came hand in hand, whereas actually I think I'm very aware now, like, I can be very multifaceted. It's absolutely fine. Like, and I think I don't want to just be seen as, oh, a mum. And I think we also tend to do that as women. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I'm now a mum. So like,
hey, mama.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? And actually, I'm very, again, it comes in self-awareness of like attaching things to myself that becomes my whole personality. And I don't want that to be what it is. I think you can be lots of different things at the same time. And I think I've learnt that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said at the beginning that I think you're a very like mission driven person. That's how you come across definitely to me. I'd love to touch on like what you're doing now on social media.
Yeah. So it's still really around kind of, I'd say, body confidence, in, you know, loving yourself for more than, you know, what your size you are, what, you know, you look like, and, you know, and appreciating, you know, that message is still there, appreciating what you can do. But I think I truly, truly believe it in myself now. But also I think it's evolved into like, one thing I said to my husband is that I've actually been to the darkest, deepest places I've ever been in my life. And the glow up I've had, like I look back and I think, God, I look so much better than I've ever done in my life. And I think, you know, that has come from being in the darkest place ever. I'm now more confident in like my style and what I want to wear. Like I was the person who would be like, oh, what's everyone wearing? Can I wear that? Oh, I'm not sure. Whereas now I'm like, I don't even decide. I let Instagram decide. I'm like, I like these looks. Tell me what to wear. And whatever they say, I do it. And I'm just like, I'm going to wear it. And like that confidence is, I've never had that. I'm just going to like put it on, find my, and enjoy that style. And that's come from that. So again, it's about dressing your body. Also like my relationship with my boobs as well. Like, you know, prior to Max, you know, and like when I was younger, they were a sexualized part of me that actually I then used as an advantage of actually, well, this is who I am. Again, attaching this to my personality. I was right. Amy with the boobs, like, and that became my personality. So I was like, I have to get them out. Like I have to do it. And then they became, you know, a hindrance because all I wanted to do was wear like nice clothes that I didn't fit into. And then they became a function. Whereas now I'm like, I have learned so much about underwear and how to wear different bras to style different outfits, and actually how building the structure underneath helps you with your style. So like, and I would never have the confidence to do that, but also the confidence to own it. Like you can be, like it's okay to be like sexy, like, and that is probably something that I've shied away from, like naturally. It just comes with the territory of having a larger chest. It just does. Like, but actually stepping into that and owning it and knowing that, you know, makes some people uncomfortable, but like, I'm not going to like shy away from them. Like they're just a part of my body. And again, I think that's a shift for me into that. They're just a functional part of my body now. Mm. Like, so, you know, that confidence in like that style of my body as well. And again, moving for movement's sake. So I don't post loads and loads of workouts all the time. That's all focused on, you know, how to get smaller or how to get like, it's just like, these are, work out with me. This is what I've done today. It's very like in the moment. Mm. This is how I've worked out today. And realistic shots, you know, it's not pretty gym sets that make you look a certain way. You know, it's just me in my normal sports bra, t-shirt, whatever. And yeah. I'm just moving for moving's sake. So I think that's kind of shifted as well.
The bigger bust thing is interesting because it feels like in society there's a formula of like, it's okay to be super skinny and massive boobs because they'll probably be fake and they'll, you know, have a certain look and they'll look a certain way in clothes. And, but then when you see someone who naturally has like a bigger bust, you know, they're probably not going to be a tiny, tiny person because that's not how bodies work.
No.
But it's almost like there's this formula. And once you go over like, oh, your size is a bit too big and your boobs are a bit too big, society kind of goes like, oh, we feel uncomfortable about that.
Yeah, yeah. I could talk about boobs all day.
Talk about boobs.
Yeah, I mean, the relationship, it's a really hard one, right? Because everyone wanted, at one point, everyone wanted to buy boobs. Everyone wanted big boobs, you know. But then if you naturally had them, it was a really contentious issue because I found that women either like were like amazed by them or you were a threat. And so, like, it was like it, and it still is like that now. And so, like, obviously, like, men naturally sexualize you anyway, and like we can unpick that another time. But with that, my biggest thing, and it wasn't so much that, is that I find, and I still find, that it stops women from wanting to be my friend.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. The people that get me, like, and find them fascinating, and like they really get me. But naturally, the amount of like stares and how comfortable, especially in toilets and stuff, that I obviously make other women feel is mad.
Really? What, yeah. From like boob envy?
I don't think it's that. I just think we've been taught as women that bigger boobs are more attractive to men, and we've been told as women that we need to compete with each other for men. I think, yeah, that's just, and that, so when you, it's probably girls that have fake boobs as well. Like, I think when you see that or on someone, it's a natural reaction to be not threatened, but kind of threatened in a way that like, oh, and believe me, I don't want to steal your boyfriend. Like, I've got an absolute nightmare at home that I have to like feed most days, you know, remind him how to look after his child. But so I always find, and I still find that with social media as well, I really like, all I want to do is help. You know, there's a whole community of us, of like full of us women who feel the same, and you can speak to absolutely any of them. We feel so like, look at like Lounge. Everyone idolises everyone they post on Lounge,
mm-hmm,
because they're all, you know, beautiful women who don't have the largest chest.
Yeah.
But then we go to the other side of, you know, the curvy cakes and the brands that I work with, and you actually find the only women that really follow those accounts are women that have lived that experience as well. There's no one's idolising being looking like that. They're just not.
I guess my big advice to friends have always been like, all we get is the industrial big strap beige bra, because there is that society expectation of like, you're too big now. Your boobs are too big that they're like, yeah, you don't know what to do with them.
Yeah. Honestly, if I had a pound for every time I cried in Marks and Spencer's changing rooms as a young girl, trying to wear a roll neck bra, essentially, is how I describe them, scaffolding, like, I'd be rich. And like, now the choice that we have as big, as full of busted women, like, is incredible. Like, brands have come so far. And that's the biggest thing I find on social now. So obviously, like, around education on bra fittings, and actually, you know, I think the stat is like 82% of women are wearing the wrong bra.
Really?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that.
Yeah. So, you know, or squeezing into the wrong bra, and like, or, you know, just not, or going to Sainsbury's and buying your bra. Oh my gosh. And like, the biggest thing I get is, oh, why do you always need to show off? Why do you always need to show off? And I'm like, but you're not saying that to smaller women who are doing 100%. Exactly the same content that I am. And it just comes down to what society has judged your body shape on and what your outcome is. And then naturally from that outcome, you know, limits who wants to work with you as well.
Mm. For people listening, what can you give, like, a bit of an overview of the kind of content that you're putting, like, on social media?
Yeah, so it's a mixture. So I do, yeah, like, full of bust kind of like lingerie, and, you know, and bras and brands that produce bras for full of busted women, and then how to build your base off of those as well. So, you know, how the different bra styles that you can get, but also like loving your body in them. And actually, confidence starts from within. And that's the same with your underwear. Like, if you put on a good set, you're going to feel so much better supported and throughout the day.
Mm.
So it's kind of along that side, along the lines of it. But there are a lot of, you know, pictures and images of me and my undies online.
Yeah,
now.
Check them out, everyone.
Yeah, I want to have a look.
I honestly love it. Like, I'm blown away when I see your Instagram, because I also had those preconceptions of what my friends have said of like, you just cannot get nice underwear. And even, you know, I buy quite a lot of nice underwear, and it's such a true thing that the more expensive the brand you go for, often the smaller and smaller the sizes are.
Yeah.
And that for me was bizarre. So I used to shop at, like, you know, pretty nice brands like La Perla or Agent Provocateur and stuff, and I was like, because I'm not a complete pancake there.
Yeah.
But it's such a yeah, it's a whole other world when you suddenly see these like bigger busted women and in like beautiful, amazing, nicely crafted underwear.
Yeah. and they have to be crafted.
Right?
Yeah. Honestly, I think, you know, most of the bigger busted bras have to be size tested like upwards of 10 to 15 times by different models, because you also find that, you know, we spoke about naturally, what you probably find more often is that bigger busted, naturally bigger busted women are slightly bigger in size, but that's not the case for everyone. Like, there are women who are naturally have a large chest but are smaller. You know, I wear a 30 to a 32 inch band, like, which is actually, even some fuller busted don't go that small in the band.
Yeah.
So it becomes even more challenging for women who are slightly smaller around like the middle or that shape to find a cup size that's their size cup with a smaller band. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then it also limits you again.
I read something, because I guess it seems like what you're doing is very much like you want to make women who have a fuller bust, as you say, realize that they can get this stuff, feel good in how they're dressing, make it a base so they can feel good in their clothes. And obviously that includes you posting content online. And I heard Jamil was talking about, apparently there's like a thing in the algorithm where it judges nudity based on clothes to flesh ratio. So if someone who's really, really small is in a bikini, the bikini top is going to cover more of their flesh, of their body.
Yeah.
But if you're a bit bigger or you have bigger bust, there's going to be less fabric for the ratio of your body. And then the algorithm flags it. So, you know, tiny, skinny girls on the beach in Australia, always going to get boosted by the algorithm.
Yeah.
But someone bigger, same beautiful beach, same beautiful bikini, is going to get flagged.
Yeah, honestly, like, I cannot tell you the amount of times I've been blocked or like, well, what do they call it? Like, restricted by Instagram. But I also found that when I did bodybuilding, is the smaller I got, the further my post got pushed in the algorithm. And even now, so I'm flagged a lot less now than I was 8 months ago when I was bigger. Yeah.
Wow.
Also, like, there's a whole community of us and like talking about hacks and stuff. Further away you are from the camera, less likely you are to get flagged. And that's because you look smaller. So like, there's lots of different ways for it. Not wearing, wearing trousers, so that, or wearing, being closer so that your knicker bands looks like you're wearing trousers. So then they perceive it as just being a top. You know, you have to edit your nipples off, cover them up. Other people don't.
Yeah, that's a journey.
Yeah, it is. But also, like, you know, I look at my For You page, and realistically, it's all thin, white, blonde women. Like, and, you know, again, like, I have a privilege in that because I'm a white, blonde woman. Like, so there's naturally, like, a push for me. It's even harder, like, follow a few creators, you know, especially those of colour, like, they have it even harder than the rest of us. Like, it's mad that. But, you know, it's an ongoing battle, and you just keep fighting it.
Fighting it for the girls you've
got. Yeah. And then also, like, it decides, you know, you're making all this content for women, and it decides, actually, women don't want it. We'll just push it out to men instead.
Yeah, how have you found that? Because I guess your content is sexy, right? It's like, you look amazing, like, so obviously it's going to get picked up in the algorithm by men as well.
And I think I fought this for a long time, and it sounds quite big-headed now I'm saying out loud about like being sexy, but I think that's just kind of naturally my vibe. I always used to idolize like Marilyn Monroe, and always like was like, oh, I would love to be like her, and then I was like, no. But actually, I think it's so like, I actually think, like, it's okay to be sexy. Like, that's just, yeah, I feel good being sexy.
Yeah.
It's something that, you know, makes me feel good. And like I said, the right women who get it will come.
Yeah. So we asked out to our audience their kind of feelings around how their identity has changed, having kids, thinking about having kids, and all of that. And there was one that I thought was really interesting that you might have some good thoughts or advice on, is that this woman said, I definitely lost my identity and your whole life changes. It took a while to reset, and I really struggle with clothes and style now too. I feel like I dress frumpy now. I started to get somewhere, but then I got pregnant again.
I can completely relate. And I think you also, what would be my advice on that? I mean, undies are a massive thing because that can structure your outfit very, very differently. And going and investing, especially even a maternal bra, like in a good bra, like invest in that, because that will change your whole outfit and how you feel and what you look like. And I also think it comes from, you know, it is the easy option is to like wear something big and cover up, but mm-hmm. actually find people that look like you and how they style it up. There's so many of creators out there. The first thing I started doing was I just would Pinterest like curvy outfits, like plus size women fashion, and have a look and try them out. Like, because actually when you start, our go-to is hide behind something big, but sometimes when you accentuate the best features of your body or the shape of your body, you can actually look completely different. So sometimes tight clothes are scary, but actually the best thing for you. Also go to a colorist as well. That's one thing.
I love that. I love watching them on TikTok.
Yeah.
I'm going to finish with our final section that we always do here on The Weird Years. Yes or mess.
Okay.
So we have 5 rapid fire questions, which if you agree with it, say yes. If you don't, mess.
Okay.
So oversharing on the pregnancy process.
Yes.
Fair enough. Post-birth fitness journeys.
Oh, it depends if they're realistic or not. Bit of a mess.
Body neutrality.
What does that mean?
So instead of being body positive or like, you know, I love my body, just like not observing your body, like being neutral of it.
Yes.
Like this is a vessel.
Yes.
Being unapologetically authentic.
Yes. Down to a T.
And treating yourself to sexy underwear.
Yes.
What's your current favourite?
What brand?
Yeah.
Scantily by Curvy Kate. I am a Scantily Curvy Kate babe all the way through. From pleather all the way through to lace.
Get pleather. I love it. Well, thank you so much for being
thank
on here. And yeah,
me.
Listeners, go and check out. Do you want to do a little plug for your Instagram?
Yeah, you can find me at Being Amy Kate. All Dreams and Dumbbells. I'm under that as well if you want just fitness content.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on, sharing your story.
Thank you.
Love it.
Bye.